Welcome to the IonaHoops.com podcast with your host, Guy Flotico.
It's a work in progress, people. I'm talking about Iona basketball, not the IonaHoops.com podcast, here in Season 4, Episode 10. Though I suppose some folks still think this is a work in progress, but I digress. We have game recaps and a big game preview. A busy episode of this work in progress for sure. But even if we don't agree what a work in progress really is around here in these parts, I'm sure we all agree it's Iona iota time. Just one iota, though, with an update on the Iona Lady Gales.
Iona Iotas.
And how about those Lady Gales? Iona traveled to Hofstra Friday night and took home a 59-54 win. Lady Gales, led by as many as 16 in this one, survived a late Pride rally. Sierra D'Angelo did Sierra D'Angelo things again, 19 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, while Petra Oborolova added 14 points and Natalia Atmagazuri, I'm going to kill her name all season long, sorry about that, scored all 11 of her points in the second half to secure the win. The Lady Gales followed that up with a 60-50 win at home over Sacred Heart. Iona led by as many as 17 in this one and took control of things early in the third quarter with a barrage of threes. They shot 43% from three for the game, while holding the Lady Pios to 32% overall. It was Atmagazuri and Oborolova added again here. The former had 18 points, and the latter had 12 points, 8 boards, and 3 assists. Here's Iona coach Ange Zamillo on the team's progress during the first month of the season. Four straight. What's different now than from the beginning of the year?
I think more games behind our, I think more games, definitely more games, and just kind of like, we've been addressing the things that we need to improve in and get better at. And I think everyone is feeling more comfortable with, what we do on offense and on defense.
Okay. And got a little bit more time before we get into full MAC gear here. What do you still feel like you need to work on the most?
I think taking care of the basketball and rebounding, these are the two things that we just need to continue to improve and get better.
Are you happy with the depth right now?
I think so. I think, the nice thing about our team is, like today we had, I thought we had great, great minutes from, Noah, Zoe, Ale, and Maya. I mean, what do we have off the bench? Points. 21 off the bench points. I mean, you have to be happy about 21 points off the bench. So I thought all of them, when they came in, they gave us some really, really good minutes on both ends of the court.
Okay. Do you want to be deeper?
Yeah. I mean, the best teams are the ones that, are deeper. But I think the nice thing about our team is that in any given night, it can be somebody else that steps up. Last game, it was Sierra Hood, a great game. The game before, the Providence, it was Noah Nat. Today, Noah had some, she had some tough shots for us. I'm sorry, Nat. And then Petra as well. She's just, you leave her open, she's knocking that down. And we love that about her. So every game for us, it might be somebody else. And I think that's what makes anything, a stronger team if you don't only have to stop one person.
Yeah. 32% for Sacred Heart today. Defense doing some really great things the last couple of games. How about that progress?
Absolutely. So, defense is kind of, we talk about it every single day. And for us, it's really, for us, it's always been about, the other team is going to score. Like, that's why you play the game. That's why, Pryor is such a great player. Like, she ended up with, 16, 11 rebounds and 6 assists, only 1 turnover. And she's just a phenomenal player. And, it's for us, it's, hey, what kind of shots are we giving up? And I thought for the most part, we gave them, we gave up the open threes. We gave up the open threes to the right people. So just continuing to kind of harp on just the details, just the details of, hey, what is it this team, wants to get out of their offenses? This was a team that was trying to get the ball inside by penetrating, but we did a decent job. Okay, it's stopping that, and then knowing who to close out to, picking the better shooter to close out to over, giving up an outside shot to somebody that just percentage-wise is not that great of a shooter. And I thought for the most part we did that.
Okay. Do you feel like you're on schedule, ahead of schedule, behind schedule? Where are you feeling right now?
As a true coach will tell you, we're not on schedule, we're behind, right? That's what I'll tell you. No, we got to, rebounding and turnovers is just something we have to continue to to get better at, because I thought some of our turnovers today were, it wasn't necessarily what their press did, it's what we, the decision making that we had. And, you know, we ended up with 18 turnovers and we probably could have had or should have had, you know, 13. So at least six of those turnovers, so five of those turnovers were just our poor decision making. So, and then obviously rebounding is just something that continues to be, one of our weaknesses.
Okay. All right, Coach, thanks a lot.
All right, let's switch gears to the men and recap the last two games. So I got to see plenty of Hofstra while in Florida, and I knew this would be a tough game for us. What I didn't know is that this one was going to be a low-scoring rock fight. If you told me we'd hold that high-scoring Hofstra offense with the nation's leading scorer to 62 points and 41% from the floor, and we wouldn't even put them on the foul line a bunch, I'd have signed for that in a second. Well, all those things indeed happened, and we still lost 62-57. The D, obviously tremendous. Weren't quite as good in the second half, but well, I attribute a lot of that to what was going on the other side of the ball. The offense had a game, well, similar to Marist's, just too many guys not making shots. Yeah, a couple guys did really play well. Wezepanzo had honestly has become our most reliable weapon, especially from the perimeter right now. He scored 15, making 6 of 11 field goals overall, 3 of 8 from 3. A nice game. Gene Aaron Gurin has been pretty quiet lately, but he was really good with 12 points and 4 of 5 shooting. He also had 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, stat-stuffing game. Dylan Saunders gave good minutes off the bench, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2 blocks. Outside of that, not a whole heck of a lot. We've got to fix the Don Tree too. He's just had such a great start to the season, and lately, it's just been a struggle for him. 0 of 9 against Hofstra. Did have 4 assists and 3 steals, but 6 turnovers. I mean, he has to produce to offset Panzo and make our whole offense go. Greg Gordon was in foul trouble early in this one. He did finish with 7-3, but only played 17 minutes, and he missed a pair of free throws late. Sultan Adewale, 4.6 boards, but only 1 of 6 from the floor. We've seen how much better we look when he attacks. I mean, it's not his fault he's being guarded by guys who are several inches taller than him, being out of place as a center. But we have to find a way to make him a factor more consistently until Oz is back. Joel Brown, very quiet, 0 points, just 2 field goal attempts. You know, I really like when he attacks the basket, but he just doesn't seem to want to do that. Jeremiah Quigley played a lot, actually 11 more minutes than Brown. He had 6 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, made both his 3-point tries, but was just 2 of 8 shooting. Terrell Williams apparently remains in the doghouse, at least for the Hofstra game, just 3 minutes. On all, the team was better from 3 than from 2. 36% to 35% overall. Hey, we were even 7 of 10 from the line, had 15 assists, 13 turnovers, but a whole lot of empty trips, as the field goal percentage implies. Guys are getting open, just not making shots. Some of that body language is not so great right now. So I'm feeling like leadership is a bit of an issue, and that is something that I did ask during the press conference after the Hofstra game. Here is a brief clip from Panzo, followed by some Tobin.
You made a comment earlier about having a couple bad practices. Give me an idea what happened in those practices that you feel like that it's causing some of the struggles during the games.
I mean, just guys not being locked in, like including myself. I was a big part of that. And just being together. We had a lot of bickering and stuff. We just got to lock into the game plan and listen to what our coaches are saying because they've won before. So a lot of us haven't won. So just listening to a winning culture and trying to build it back here.
And how about with you guys in terms of building that with the younger guys on the team? What do you feel like the leadership is sometimes lacking, or do you feel like it's just still a work in progress for you guys in that way too?
Yeah, it's definitely a work in progress. I feel like it's lacking from us older guys, including me, and our young guys have really stepped up, just pushing us. So we had to be better as the older guys. We've been in college for 4 to 5 years, so it's all on us, really.
was mentioned about talking about the leadership and maybe how it was lacking a little bit. You made a comment just before about how you were impressed with Hofstra's leadership.
Yep.
Is that an issue right now, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, it's a situation where they've been together for a while. A lot of guys have been together for a long time, right? Darlington and Tyler, even 1 year makes a huge difference, right? So we're trying to speed things up a little bit, right? And now we're dealing with some adversity. How do we handle the adversity? So it's a matter of, I don't think it's anything we would expect. But I'm watching them before the game, and a lot of times they're talking, their players are talking, and with us it's still me talking. My voice is way too much right now, you know? At some point it's gonna become their team. You know, that's just a player-led team goes a lot farther than a coach-led team. And like, our staff has been kind of bringing a lot of energy. We have a high-energy staff. But that's at some point, like, our voice can't be the loudest voice in practice, in games, in warm-ups, all that kind of stuff, you know? So I think we'll get there, you know? But there's no guarantee you're going to get there. Sometimes you don't get there. So like, there's got to be some changes made from how we handle ourselves.
Hey, you know who really hasn't had a chance to demonstrate leadership? Terrell Williams. Well, he got his chance against St. Francis thanks to Greg Gordon missing the game for contact detrimental to the team, and we needed it. This one started shaky, another slow start by the older guys. So Tobin turned to Williams and four freshmen at the first media timeout. Quigley, Aaron Gurren, Bates, and Saunders, and the team responded with a run that could get Iona back in it. But this game again was not a pretty one. Iona defended well, but struggled shooting it again. And when things were still tight late, Tobin again turned to Williams, Quigley, and Aaron Gurren, and the Gales were able to stave off what would have been a substantial upset at home with a gritty 61-54 win over the Terriers of St. Francis. The offensive star was Aaron Gurren. He put up a career-high 20, and for most of the game, he was the only Gale in double figures until Quigley joined him late by going 8 of 10 from the line and his 12-point, 7-rebound, 6-assist effort. Williams made some big, tangible-type plays in this one and, again, provided that leadership that we've been lacking to complement his 9 points and 7 rebounds. Good to see him back out in the flow. But again, like a few games this season, easy summary, good D, bad O. The D did its parts. St. Francis shot 31% overall, 17% from three. But there was just a struggle on the glass a little bit. 15 offensive boards enabled St. Francis to stay in this one. They all run together after a while, people. Anyway, the offense, 35% overall, 25% from three. Off day for Panzo. Not much again from Tree Two and Brown. Adewale did get 8 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks. I mean, the vets are going to have to give us more over the long haul if this team is going to turn a corner. But you do have to be excited by the performances of the freshmen. And maybe we're seeing a little bit of a transition on the team this year where Tobin's going to start to say, hey, you know, this is the future. We're going to start to go with these guys. It was very telling who was in the game down the stretch, as it was, again, the freshmen who were out there late in the game with Terrell Williams. But anyway, with that, here's Quigley, Aaron Gurren, and Tobin on the win.
All right. Well, this is very telling that we have two freshmen in the room as opposed to usually getting the grad students. Tell us about how your roles have evolved as this year has progressed and how important it has been. To get some leadership today. Terrell Williams, I thought, was really a great leader for you guys today. He's showing some of the energy. Some of the older guys sometimes are not showing. You guys are usually bringing the energy. Tell us about the progress the team has been making with that in that area.
I would say the progress has been good. I feel like we came together as a team today. We had to grind it out and get a win. I feel like for me, my role, I feel like I need to come off the bench and give the team a spark when the team is down. Do all I can do to get a win and help my teammates. Shots.
Jeremiah, how much do you pride yourself on doing the little things? You didn't shoot well from the field, but 8 for 10 from the line, including a few clutch ones. What's your mindset in that last minute, and how much do you pride yourself on you know, doing what you can to help this team win?
That last minute is get a win, help my teammates, get them in the right spots, and let's get stops. That's my pride in the last minute. I would say, like I said, just come in, get a spark, help my team, whatever we can do to win. I want to do it, and I do the little things just to win.
How do you guys feel about the ball movement tonight? Sometimes stagnant, sometimes better. They've down the stretch a little, maybe some of the best ball movement you had all night.
I feel it was way better. We've been working on our ball movement the last 2 days in practice, and I feel our transition was way better and our spacing. So we had chances to attack, like JQ using the ball screens, and it was a better movement and rotation.
Gene, can you explain why you're playing with so much confidence right now and you're not looking like a freshman out there?
I feel I've been playing basketball since 5 years old. I feel like I do this every time. And just confidence, like I feel like I want to get to the NBA level, pro level, and I feel like it takes confidence. But it's been a progress because I didn't shoot the ball well the first game, so I think I'm getting more confidence.
How much encouragement does Coach Anderson give you to continue to fire away and continue to shoot to help this team that's been struggling from three at times?
Honestly, he told me to shoot the ball because like I used to grab the ball and not shoot it. So he was like, you can shoot the ball. I was trying to make the right play and stuff, but sometimes picking the right play is shooting the ball too. So,
what's it like as freshman trying to learn how to play Tobin's press?
It can be challenging at times, but we're getting there. We're getting the progress. Just basically, you just gotta have effort and just do the right things in the press, and it all comes together.
Yeah, it's mainly everybody doing their job. Because if somebody's not doing their job, the press is not. It's not gonna work.
But Jeremiah, how happy were you to pick up Joel? You know, been struggling the last two games. He got into foul trouble early in that second half. How happy were you to pick him up and be able to fill in that gap?
Joel's my guy. He been a high major guard. He's gonna get right. He's good. But some guys have off nights. Just got to come off the bench, pick the spark up, help the team to win. But I know my guy will bounce back.
How much in those huddles was Coach Anderson preaching Gene rebounding? Because they were getting a lot of offensive rebounds on you guys. How much was he preaching that during the timeout huddles? And what kind of flipped the switch for you guys at the end, do you feel like?
He was preaching a lot. I feel we were a little off in the beginning where they were getting a lot of rebounds and we were not boxing out. So what got us was the win. We have to win and the energy and hustle, that's it.
How do you guys build on this? It's been kind of an uneven kind of year with sometimes the offense is there, sometimes the defense is there. But, you know, how do you build on this now?
I feel like we're going to practice this week. We got a whole week of practice. I feel like we just bring energy and just watch film. And the little things we did wrong, make them good and put everything together as one. Mm-hmm.
One thing that stood out both you guys is your defense. Last two or three games, I think you're two of the better defensive players on the floor. Why is that?
I just love to defend. Like,
yeah, we love guarding.
I don't like a person scoring on me, so I just sit down and guard. So I can sit.
Good win. You know, I thought St. Francis played extremely. We were very worried about that. They'd won the last two games on the road. They beat Lehigh, they beat American, and Rob does a great job. Rob Carroll's a very good coach, and they came in. They're young, and they're playing loose, so they came after us, and, you know, you get yourself down 8-2 to start the game. You feel like you're digging out of a hole the whole time, you know, and so I didn't like the start of the game, but I thought after that, we're a work in progress, but, you know, and they did a great job. They switched a lot of our screens, switched our motion. There's not room to drive. We don't have a back-to-the-basket score right now, so that hurt us a little bit. But listen, we found a way to win. I look out there a lot of times, and there's three or four freshmen out there. That was not part of the plan, but that's what's happening. You know, I mean, I thought Gene and JQ, they finished. You know, I mean, I don't care. It's like a horse race. I don't care who the favorite is. It's 3-1, 4-1, 15-1, 21. With 4 minutes to go, you could be playing Kentucky, you could play St. Francis, PA. It's a hell of a game. And we had to finish that game, and like Gene made a three and got fouled, made a three on the wing. And there's no doubt in his mind he belongs out there. And then JQ made big plays too. And I was really happy about Terrell Williams. And I was really happy that Terrell played well. I thought he gave us great minutes and brought a lot of energy and play. And that's a great piece moving forward. So very happy to get the win. It's much better than the alternative. We got a Monday off here. And, you know, we're fighting ourselves a little bit. We're fighting ourselves internally. I said to him, you know, obviously Greg Gordon didn't suit up tonight, didn't play, and suspended for some, you know, just conduct detrimental to the team. You know, just not being a great teammate. And we're trying to learn that stuff. But we're, you know, it's hard enough to win at this level with that when you're trying to fight Marist and Fairfield and Ryder and Siena. It's really hard to win when you're fighting yourself. And so we're fighting ourselves a little bit. But I'm thinking maybe we're going to turn the corner. That'd be great. But that was good to get a win. Really proud of the freshman backcourt. I think we all know they played very well. Really down the stretch, too, which is great. So good to see. And that part's good.
You talk about Gene's progress from when he first got him until today, where he scores 20 points and leads the team to victory.
Yeah, I mean, he just – and, like, his thing is his defense. He really likes to defend. So I thought his defense was good. He still takes some chances sometimes, but I thought he did a lot of good things there. he came in, you could just see when he came in, his eyes were like, all right, we're in trouble. I need to, you know, that's pretty impressive for a freshman. And he just kind of took over for the night. And we went from 8-2 to 8-8 like that. You know, it should be like that. It should be like you should go to your bench. And it should be, we should be up 8-2. I mean, it'd be nice one time to be up 8-2 ourselves. That can't happen. That's not against the law. And then Gene comes in and we go by 8 or 10 points. And then it's a whole different story. So he had a look in his eye. I thought JQ did too. So those two guys played well. But Gene's gotten a lot better. And he's a hard-nosed, tough kid.
His entire game, right, is developing.
Yes. A little bit of everything, right? Shoot the ball well. Like I told you about a month ago, he didn't want to shoot. He's afraid, when, you know, he's a socialist. He wants everybody else to shoot. Like he's got to stop being a capitalist. He's got to try to get his own stuff a little bit too. And he's starting to get a little bit more that way. I mean, he's a wonderful kid. You know, now he still makes mistakes. An out of bounds play where we told him the play was coming, and they scored with about 3 seconds on the out of bounds play. So, you know, I mean, got to figure out a way to guard the 3 second out of bounds play. But he's makes mistakes, but man, he didn't blink at all. He just kept, I thought he made, you know, big time plays, and happy about that.
The other night after Hofstra, we talked about sometimes maybe a lack of leadership. Tonight, you got that leadership from Williams.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, have you had a meeting with the older kids saying, look, somebody's got to step up and lead this team?
Guy, I've had more meetings than I think any like, it's like the White House around here sometimes. Sometimes those meetings I'm not sure how productive they are. I've talked to my players. I mean, I haven't seen my wife, my kids, my two dogs in forever. I spend more time with my players. We're trying. You know, we're doing a little bit of everything. You know, and my staff is unbelievable. It's constant. So yeah, we've had meetings, and that's the Terrell Williams we need. You know, that's the Terrell Williams that we expect him to play that way. And like, listen, part of that is the fact that like when you're not playing well, it's hard to get confidence because you're not playing a lot. So he comes in, he makes a mistake, or for 2 or 3 minutes, it's like, all right. You know, we take him out. It's like he needs to be able to play through. I thought tonight he played through some stuff. Probably not having Greg out there, not having Oz out there. We kind of had to play him. And then he proved it to us why he was a big part of our success. So I think that piece right there is huge, you know. So I'm happy about that.
Is there a reason why you've kind of placed him with the freshmen, even like when you made the lineup switches tonight?
I thought when we first started, because when we scrimmaged Fordham, he was unbelievable. If you can see the Fordham scrimmage tape, he was probably one of our best players, probably if not our best player. And I said to Terrell, I said, you could be sixth man of the year in the conference. You could be the max sixth man of the year. And he liked that idea. And then he hurt his ankle and didn't play against UMass. And it just kind of like he never got back to where he was at before. But thank God it's a long season. We have time. And I mean, I was really excited about the fact that he played well tonight, because he can do some stuff. He's a big, strong kid. He gets to the basket. He can rebound. He can defend. And he's a fifth-year senior. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of us. We got to believe in him, and we got to – and he's practiced better. I mean, I told you about the – we actually had 2 good days of practice. I told that – so don't think I'm just making it – somebody told the guy before the game. I said, we actually had 2 really good days of practice. He had 2 really good days of practice, so he played well. So I'm excited about that.
Tobin, you guys, they went on a 7-0 run to tie it, and then Gene hit another big three.
Yeah.
How much could your guys learn from, you know, their ability to fight back and ultimately pull this one out?
I hope a lot, right? And I think we learned too. You know, we're still searching for a finishing lineup. And everybody always worries about the starting lineup. It's like, who finishes the games for us, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the end of that game, it was JQ and Gene, right? So there was no one on the bench. There was no hesitation. There was no like, hey, let's. It was JQ and JB, JQ and Gene have to be out there. So that, I think that helps us a little bit learn our guys, like, and it helps, obviously should help them as well.
Wilborn is kind of a bruiser for them. He does a lot of, you know, rebounds, blocks.
Yeah.
How much was he a part of the scouting report coming into this game, and what do you think allowed him to hurt you there, late in that second?
Once again, they hurt us on the offensive glass. Like, he hurt us on the offensive glass, and he was just going – he was relentless on the offensive boards, big, strong kid. So we knew he's part of the equation. Big, strong guys haven't hurt our 5-spot as much. I thought they hurt us a little bit tonight. But, like, we're not rebounding like we should. We get 15 offensive rebounds tonight. We gave up a bunch to Hofstra too. It's got to stop, you know? And I think they're sensing that we're soft. I told you guys, we're not soft. This is not a soft group. And Brian saw us at the scrimmage. We are tough kids. We're not playing as tough as we can right now. But you know, is that lack of confidence? Is that lack of whatever it is? It's kind of like, well, I'm waiting for you to do it. I'm waiting for you to do it. You know, I think we need to get that across the whole team, because we're getting beat on the glass. I mean, it was like they got 15 offensive boards. It was 44 to 38, like, you know, and we're going to see bigger, stronger teams down the road. So it's got to be better.
Are you still at the point where you're telling Gene to shoot even more than he has? I mean, he's had a couple of games where he's only taken a couple of shots.
I think he's actually felt more like now he knows he's supposed to shoot now. You know, like we haven't, you know, I mean, we talked to him occasionally here or there. He's a great kid. Like he's receptive and happy and just, he just plays. He practices. I mean, he's a guy who practices well every day. He rarely has a bad practice. So I think he's starting to feel a little more confidence to go make plays.
How would have Shema impacted the game like this tonight?
I'd like to find out, you know, right? I mean, for my own sanity. I mean, just having him go through shoot around and go through practice and stuff, it brings the whole squad up. So, I mean, he's been playing 3-on-3. We're counting the days. He just brings a spirit and energy and he's the one guy who's done it before at a high level and won. And I think that kind of translates to everybody else. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot, like, you know, I couldn't sleep last night. It's like 3 a.m. and my dog's barking and all hell's breaking loose. I'm thinking to myself, it's like we had a team, like from all summer with Oz part of it, right? We go play our first scrimmage, so it's like November what? Like the first. Then all of a sudden Oz goes dead. Then that's a brand new team. Now we got Oz back in a week or two, and now it's like another team again. So it's kind of like like I said, the guys, the staff too, we got to be really good going forward because now we can't, the learning curve is, there's not as much time to learn now as there was probably before, you know? Right. But it's like two different teams, one with Oz, one without Oz. I think he's a huge piece for a lot of reasons. I know the guys do too.
Will Oz guard the inbounds like he did last year?
He might. We get all kinds of ideas.
Okay.
I mean, I get tons of ideas, so, you know.
Does he have a chance to be ready for St. Joe's?
We're gonna be very patient, right? So a chance, yes. But like, if it's even close, if it's like, he's not gonna play, you know.
Are you guys close to making a decision on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's been cleared. It's just a matter of not when he feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of that when you hurt your knee is your mental state. You know, how do you feel planting, cutting, doing that kind of stuff? He looks good doing it, but it's just a matter of when he feels 100% comfortable. The thing we do have, we have some time here, you know. So it's like, hey, we wanted to play against St. Peter's. Now, you know, that's, and like, we're gonna go play St. Joe's, and St. Joe's really good next Saturday. And I'm actually excited we're playing St. Joe's. We're a really good team and in a great environment. And like, let's, you know, we've played those teams well. Let's go play them well on Saturday with or without Oz.
How much have you watched St. Joe's so far, and what are gonna be the keys in that game?
I watched the whole Princeton game. It was a great game at their place. And so we played St. Joe's last year at FDU. Yep. So I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little bit stitious. So last year we were not playing very well, and we went to St. Joe's and we played great, and that kind of got us going a little bit. So maybe that happens again. Who knows? But they're very good. Billy Lang is a good friend of mine. We have a good history for a long time. Actually, he got the King's Point job. The final two candidates for the King's Point job were both like 25 years old. Was him and I, and he got the Merchant Marine King's Point job, and I had to hold off for a year. So we become good friends. Good guy, does a great job. I'm happy for him. His team's really good this year. Got a chance to win the A-10. Beat Villanova, play Kentucky to overtime, beat Princeton today. So it'll be a great game for us to go play.
Joel picks up his third foul at the 18-minute mark. You sit him for, I think, about 12 minutes there. Was it more so kind of just riding the hot hand with Gene, or was it kind of trying to send a message to him that he has to play a little
bit? No message. Just like, I thought JQ was good. And like JQ played, and, you know, I think a lot of, I mean, we started both of them together, so that'll be a solution sometimes too, you know. But I thought JQ was just really, really good. I mean, what did he play tonight? I mean, he was good. And he missed some shots. He played 32 minutes. He's 2 for 10. He missed some shots in the lane he's going to make too. Like, he missed the call up. You're fighting yourself and things are not going well. It's like you miss those little easy shots from the basket, or shots that could have got us by 4, could have got us to 6, could have got us to 7. We just couldn't get that. And I think he'll start making those shots. But yeah, he played. It was more so him playing well, mm-hmm. You know.
We talked about Joel hasn't been the best shooter in his career, but how much is he trying to work on that in order to make sure he can be on the floor in big moments?
We're trying to work on that. We're trying to work on him driving the ball more, trying to go more in transition. But how Joel impacts the game is defensively with our press. That's why he's got to be a great guy in our press, because that's where he impacts the game. But the biggest impact for him is defensively, right? And loose balls and things like that. So I think that's the part where he's just got to keep on getting better and better. But I mean, he's a great kid. He wants to do well. And anything he gives offensively is kind of extra. You know, I mean, they're clogging. Things will change when we take the lineup with Oz out there. They're clogging things up for us big time. There's not room to drive. he needs room, JB needs room to drive. So I think when we move forward, there'll be more space for him to make those kind of plays. But he's never going to be a great shooter. Yeah. We work on it, obviously, but that's just not his thing. But it's his defense, it's his toughness, it's his ability to drive, make plays for other guys. It's really good. Yeah, he's gonna, you know, he's struggling. He knows it. He wants to do well, you know, so he'll get better.
You heard Tobin hit on the St. Joe's game, so what better way to get into our preview of Iona versus St. Joe's Saturday night at UBS Arena? Tobin Anderson said all along he wants to play a good schedule, and no doubt the non-conference slate for the Gales has been full of challenges, with more to come. And here comes one. Iona gets ready to take on one of the better teams in the A-10 this season, St. Joseph's, out at UBS Arena on Long Island as part of what they're calling Holiday Hoopfest, a triple header with Towson versus Bryant and Rhode Island versus Delaware as the opening games before the Gales and Hawks meet at 7. So, St. Joseph's pretty darn good. 8-2 overall, with wins over, Penn, Villanova, and Temple to win the Big Five championship. For comparative purposes, they did beat Sacred Heart at home by only 9. For a tough overtime loss at Kentucky. Just yesterday, they knocked off previously unbeaten Princeton in Philly. If they're not ranked by the time you're listening to this podcast, they'll be pretty close. This team hangs their hat on the defensive end, give up 64 points per game, allowing just 38% field goal and 30% from three. And they get their scoring from deep. They make 11 threes per game, and they shoot 36% from deep as a team. Now, they'll play a lot of guys, 9 guys averaging double figures in minutes. But they do have 5 primary horses. It all starts with 6'2 junior guard Eric Reynolds. He's averaging 17 points, 3 assists, and he's shooting 39% from three. 4 other guys averaging in double figures, starting with Xavier Brown, freshman 6'2 guard. He's averaging 12 points and 3 assists. He's shooting 50% from 3. Rashier Fleming is a 6'9 sophomore forward. He's got 11 points and 7 boards per game. Junior 6'2 guard Lynn Greer is averaging 11 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists per game. He's shooting 41% from 3. Grad guard 6'6 Cameron Brown. He's averaging 10 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 39% from 3. So yeah, an uphill climb in this one. Want a couple reasons to believe I got that covered. The Hawks somehow lost a game to Texas A&M Commerce. Not Texas A&M, Texas A&M Commerce, 57-54. And how about this? Outside of that Kentucky game, every game on St. Joe's schedule thus far has been played in and around Philly. So picture the scene. Third game of 3 at UBS, probably not more than 1,000 in the building at most. No real energy in the building, not a ton of St. Joe's fans in the building. And maybe those threes just aren't falling in that scenario for St. Joe's. And Iona finds itself in yet another game in those 50s here with a chance to steal one. Here's another one, just perhaps a letdown here after what is an emotional huge win that they had just over Princeton at home in front of a raucous crowd that now has the whole nation buzzing about them. So maybe a letdown in store. Just maybe. It would be a great sign of growth for this team to find a way to beat a team of this caliber, that's for sure. Maybe this is the perfect setting. Who knows? Well, perhaps Matt Gifford does. He's covered St. Joe's for years for 247 Sports. And the other day, we talked about the matchup between the Gales and Hawks. Coming at you now. We're coming up upon a neutral site game against St. Joe's at the UBS Arena in Long Island there. Kind of a weird atmosphere for this one, but problem is we got a quality opponent and the Gales are still trying to figure out their way. But we want to talk about St. Joe's in this segment here. And I brought in Matt Gifford, who has provided a longtime coverage of St. Joe's for 247 Sports. You can also find him on Twitter at Hawk Hill Hardwood. Matt, welcome to the podcast. I'm a big time fan of St. Joe's. I've loved the way the program has had those real peaks that I think Iona fans have been dreaming about over the years. We haven't quite gotten there, but tell us about your experience of covering St. Joe's and I assume a fan of the program as well. And what it's like being a St. Joe's fan.
Yeah, no. So first of all, thanks for having me. Any opportunity to talk basketball is a good opportunity. So it's great to be on. Thanks again. So I've done this for a while now. I started in about 2007-ish, 2008-ish, kind of doing it independently. I'm a teacher, so I had summers off, and I was like, I have an excuse now to go and watch AAU stuff. Kind of can justify it. I enjoy it, but now I can like excuse it to my wife and do that kind of thing. And then it sort of morphed into being less of the high school AAU stuff and entirely focused on St. Joe's, which is where I graduated from in 2006. So was there during some of those peaks you just alluded to and have been covering them through a couple of those. And then also some valleys as well. So it's been a good journey though.
Well, that's And this year was one of those years where we kind of expected a little more of a peak, and St. Joe's has kind of met the challenge at the time of this recording, 7-2 overall with a game mm-hmm. coming up against Princeton, which will be fun for you guys, I'm sure. I certainly had some great games along the way there. Winning the Big Five is ridiculous. And then for comparative purposes for Iona fans who also beat Sacred Heart, St. Joe's beat Sacred Heart by 9. And then of course you had a great, if you want to call it a great loss at Kentucky in overtime as well. So let's talk about this, the expectations and how you've met them. Is it surprising to you, that you guys, are doing as well as expected here? Or did you expect maybe not to be quite as good as you are so far?
Yeah, so I think that like the 7-2 record part is probably right around where I would have expected going into this game against Princeton. I think going into the year, I probably didn't expect Princeton. I don't know how many people expected Princeton to be 9-0 and winning these like road games in pretty emphatic, and they're getting attention too, which is deserved. They just handled a Drexel team that pretty easily handled Villanova, which that's a whole separate conversation. But I think 7-2 probably is what I would have anticipated. The manner in which they've gotten to 7-2 is a little bit interesting. I did not think that they were going to lose. St. Joe's was going to lose to Texas A&M Commerce. That is not a good loss. That's like a sub-300 KenPom loss. So I would have had that as a win. And then to be totally honest with you, I did actually think that St. Joe's was going to take one of the Kentucky Villanova games, because I do think the St. Joe's talent is there. I actually thought they were going to win at Kentucky and lose at Villanova. And the reason for that being Kentucky's youth, and St. Joe's does have some youth. We'll get into that. Like some of their really better players are freshmen and sophomores, but they also have a fifth year senior who's one of their main guys in Cameron Brown, and Eric Reynolds is a third year guy. So there's experience. So I was thinking, all right, maybe they can go into Kentucky in a game. Kentucky isn't that game for St. Joe's was squashed in between them playing Kansas and Miami. So I was like, maybe that'll be a letdown game for Kentucky. And then Villanova, I looked at as being this experience transfer heavy team. So I was like, that's a game Villanova probably wins. So probably 7-2. Probably wouldn't have thought the Texas A&M loss, and probably would have flipped the Kentucky Villanova. Could have seen them 8-1. Could have seen them below that too. But I think 7-2 is pretty fair.
Okay. One thing I wanted to ask you about, the odd thing about the schedule to me is that Kentucky is the only game that you actually played outside of Philly all season. Am I right about that? Is that a concern for you at all?
So I think that it's really interesting. I think that this St. Joe's team, and they've shown this so far, they're a team that's going to not be like a mentally weak team. I think that this St. Joe's team is going to be a team that plays well on the road, because I think they're going to kind of feed off of any kind of like tough environment. So I think the Kentucky game, while Rupp wasn't exactly as probably packed and jammed and crazy for that, because it's St. Joe's, I think the players enjoyed that environment. I think that, I don't know if it's going to necessarily come back to bite them. Playing at Villanova's, yeah, it's in the city, but that's a pretty hostile environment. If anything, I think the games that could cause this St. Joe's team a tough time are games in somewhat empty arenas, which we may be getting to here in a moment, without a ton of juice, because I think that this team has the talent to run with just about anybody. It's whether they're in like that. And I think they'll play well in tough environments. Are they going to play tough in an arena with 800, 1,000 people that aren't super into the game? I don't know, because that Commerce game that they lost was a pretty empty arena and there was no juice and they kind of played to that energy. So I don't think, to answer your question, that a not playing outside of Philly is going to hurt them. I think they'll be okay in road games. I think it's going to be those like winter break type of games where this team could slip a little bit.
Okay. So you started to talk about a couple of the players. Tell us a little bit more about the roster, how it's made up. But then a question kind of relating to what you were just going to, is this an energy team? Is this a team that really, I mean, they obviously, it looks like they hang their head on the defensive end, but you need energy to play great defense. Yeah. Is this an energy team? And tell us more about the roster.
Yeah. So I think that, first of all, the biggest difference between this team and Billy Lang's last four is on the defensive end. I believe the only team that scored 70, broken 70 this year is Kentucky at home. And that's a Kentucky game, team that I believe in their next game against Miami, like broke 100. So that Kentucky team can score. So I think the biggest difference between this St. Joe's team in the last 4 years is, yes, they're still reliant on three-point shooting, which is problematic if the three-point shot's not falling. The difference is they don't need to score 80 points a game this year. Like this St. Joe's team, if they're not shooting the ball well, is going to be able to win games 70-63 or something like that. Whereas years past, that's not something that they would have been able to do. And then I guess I can sort of transition to that into the roster and maybe the why defensively this team has been better. So the team is very guard heavy. Billy Lang will go to four guards a lot of the time with this team. Those four guards being Cameron Brown, who's a fifth-year senior, Eric Reynolds, who's a junior, Lynn Greer, who transferred from Dayton to St. Joe's and is in his second season at St. Joe's after playing just a handful of games at Dayton. He's a Philly kid. Lynn Greer, senior's kid, Lynn Greer from Temple. Mm-hmm. And then a transformative piece for them, which I think people thought would be transformative, but it's come. I know Billy Lang said this on the Field of 68 podcast this week. It's just come sooner than they anticipated, is Xavier Brown, who's a freshman, who Philly kid, his stepfather is one of the St. Joe's assistant coaches. Like USC was involved in his recruitment, but with his stepdad on staff at St. Joe's, it's one of those things that kind of, I think a lot of people thought that's where he was going to go. Mm-hmm. Really quick, but his shot is way ahead of, I think, where they anticipated. He's shooting somewhere around 50% from three on the season on like pretty good volume. And he just changes the way that they can play a bit because they can move him on the ball and then those other three guards off ball. And that's really changed the way this team has played. And then in the middle, they have a 7-footer named Chris Asundoko, who has been hurt all year. He's played a couple games. He's about 7'2", 280, had like a toe sprain, which I've heard it explained that if you're 7'2", 280 pounds, that's a lot different than if you're not, because you're putting a lot more weight on it.
Right.
And just like the pressure. So he's played, he had, I think, 9 points and 9 rebounds at Kentucky and played pretty well. But the buzz last year surrounding him as he redshirted was that he was a professional, like he was a pro. He hasn't really shown that this year yet. But again, health has been an issue. And then Rashier Fleming has been the other key piece. And the thing with him, he's like a 6'9 sophomore. He's really come into his own. He had a double-double against Temple. And he had a double-double against Temple, and he had a massive game against Villanova as well. So he's just a really, really good player. He's a really, really good player. So that's kind of the personnel. And then you got some other pieces like Kacper Klotzek, who's a junior forward, kind of versatile. Anthony Finkley's a freshman who's actually been starting the last couple games. He was high school teammates with Xavier Brown. So it's a pretty deep St. Joe's team, really guard dependent, takes, I think it's the fifth highest nationally, right? So like, I think they're like top five nationally in percentage of their shots that come from three, which Billy's done. But the difference this year is they have a defense that sort of allows some variance this year.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the transition to the Iona game. You know probably a little bit of Iona.
Yeah.
Their history over the years.
For sure.
Bit of a transition year for the program now with Tobin Anderson taking over Rick Pitino. Entirely new roster. No returning players except for one, who of course did not play for Tobin last year. So, and that one player is our 7-foot center, Oz Shema, who has been out and hasn't played yet this year, and he's projected to be an All-MAC player. So we're at the moment undersized and learning a new system and all a bunch of new pieces trying to mesh. And here we are, you know, with a losing record right now. So we've had our struggles, but we've been up and down. We played close at Charleston the first game of the year, lost by a couple points. We're in the game at Colorado into the second half before they pulled away. So like your same point, we've kind of played to the competition a little bit. So there is that potential that we could play well in this kind of game. But let's say this, let's say you look at the scoreboard after that game and, you know, Iona's won the game, you know, 72-66. What went wrong? What happened in your mind? What would have gone wrong?
Well, I'll start off by saying this. I went to the St. Joe's game last year against Tobin Anderson, and sat with my then 9-year-old son, directly behind the St. Joe's bench and brought him, my son, to that game. It was the one game I brought him to last year, fully anticipating St. Joe's to win pretty comfortably. I think I tweeted out a couple minutes into the game. And this is ignorance on my part. I'm like, I don't really know who this other coach is, but he is fired up. And then lo and behold, Tobin Anderson like became a national name, like national name last year. So it's kind of cool. Like looking back on it with my son, I was like, oh, and like you saw Tobin Anderson in December, the whole rest of the world knows who he is now. And it was funny. I put something out like, not really sure who this is. And all the people that I know that follow basketball closely locally, especially at the D2 and D3 levels, I started getting a barrage of texts and messages just saying Key Ken coach. So to answer your question, that's part of my answer is I think that you have a coach there who just is that good. I don't think that, and I do think Billy Lang's a good coach. I'm not saying this, like, don't read into it that I'm being like backhanded about St. Joe's. I don't think, and again, I haven't watched every Iona game. I know a little bit about the roster and have like kind of box score scouted a little bit. I don't think right now Iona's talent level is where St. Joe's is. So like, if you're asking how did Iona win, I'm not going to say like they got better guard play, because I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think that Iona has someone necessarily like Rashir Fleming is freakish in his like versatility at the four. I don't know if Kreese will be healthy to play in that. So like, it's not going to be the players. It's going to be Tobin. And it could be that energy piece. This St. Joe's game team can have a game where they hang with anyone, as I said, because they shoot the ball. They also could go 6-for-33 from three. And if it's a game where maybe the defense just doesn't do enough, Tobin last year against St. Joe's did a lot of stuff with ball pressure.
Yeah.
Like just tenacious ball pressure. And I'll be honest with you. And again, the St. Joe's player, whoever might listen to this, it's okay. The St. Joe's guards weren't up for it last year. Like they got out toughed at home. Tobin had his guards in the belly of St. Joe's guards every time they brought the ball up the court, and St. Joe's wasn't ready for it. They got out toughed, they got out schemed. I haven't watched enough Iona to know personnel wise kind of what you are, other than looking at some scores. But I think if you're asking me how they win, it's going to be a combination of coaching, scheming, maybe St. Joe's not having it intensity wise and just having an off shooting night. But it's doable. Like, again, I think that this St. Joe's team could beat Princeton and then drop a game to an Iona. Like, I don't think anything's out of the mix here.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Well, Matt, I want to thank you for taking a few minutes to come on and give us a preview of this game. Are you going to be up at UBS?
I am not. I'm going to be at the Princeton game on Sunday. I'm not going to make it up to that. I do hope that it gets some sort of crowd. These types of events worry me.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I was almost worried heading into that Big Five challenge, but it did okay. But like an event like this, and that's where I bring up the energy. Like, I don't know from your end what you've heard about what a crowd could look like. I don't know that area that well. Like, well, are we looking at an event with like 1,000 people, 2,000? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's strange in that it's the third game too. It's not like that's starting too late, but if you're the middle game of the three, you're going to get overlap from both.
Right.
You know, so I don't know what to expect in terms of a crowd. I mean, Iona does have an alumni presence on Long Island, but our family is only so big anyway. So it's
right. And I don't know how many
you said, 1,000 would be a lot, I think.
And St. Joe's has a decent like North Jersey fan base. A lot of St. Joe's people are in North Jersey, but like I still don't know how many of them are making the trip out to Long Island.
You know, a week and a half before Christmas.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So the crowd here, I think the players are going to have to provide their own energy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. And Iona kind of is an energy team as well. So yeah, that could be an interesting one based
it
on
could,
that.
We could be, it could be like 56-53 with 4 minutes to play in this one. You know, I have no idea what to expect.
Well, if you hear somebody yelling at the refs, it's probably me. I know his voice. I heard him.
I will recognize it.
That's right. Love it. Well, Matt, thanks again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Hope the both teams stay healthy and have success all season, because it's only great for our net ratings at the end of the day. So
100%.
So thank you again. And thanks for coming on. And we'll catch up again down the line.
Nice. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks again to Matt Gifford for joining us on the pod. Tobin's looking to get the Gales cooking as we head toward the holidays. Just a couple more non-conference tilts until it's all MAC all the time. Keep the faith, Iona fans, and join me on this adventure. Otherwise, I'm just sitting here talking to myself. Go Gales!
Thank you for listening to this edition of the IonaHoops.com podcast. This podcast is a production of IonaHoops.com with publisher Guy Filotico. The opinions shared during this podcast are those of Guy Filotico, IonaHoops.com, and any featured guests. This podcast is not affiliated with Iona University Athletics or the university itself. Thank you for supporting IonaHoops.com.